Thank you for joining me for the East Valley News. I'm your volunteer reader, Leslie Hunt. Today we are going to be focusing on the news of the past week from Santan and Queen Creek. So if you're ready, let's get going. Our first article is entitled Mesa, Queen Creek Lawmakers Have Different Fuel, Electric, Vehicle Tax Ideas. This was posted in the Queen Creek Independent July 7th, 2025 and written by Howard Fisher. He's describing the measure as a, quote, freedom to travel, end quote, issue, but a proposal that Senator Jake Hoffman encouraged his colleagues this session to put on the 2026 ballot would remove one option that lawmakers have to ensure that the ever-increasing number of electric vehicle owners in Arizona pay their fair share of the costs of road construction and repair. SCR 1004 would put a provision in the Arizona Constitution barring state and local government from imposing a tax or fee, quote, based on the vehicle miles traveled, end quote. All this comes as lawmakers continue to struggle with the fact that there are more and more vehicles on the road that use no gasoline at all, and that means they don't pay the 18 cent a gallon gasoline tax that goes into the Highway User Revenue Fund. Put simply, under the current system, the shift to all electric cars could undermine the state's ability to not just build new roads, but potentially, more important, upgrade and repair current ones. But approval of the ballot measure would remove the option of charging electric vehicle owners who escape those gas taxes a fee based on their usage of Arizona roads. Hoffman said it's not a question of protecting those who use electric vehicles as the driver of a Tesla Cybertruck, that includes him, from the taxes generated on the sale of fossil fuels. Instead, the Queen Creek Republican said this is about protecting everyone from government overreach, regardless of the fuel they use. This is a measure that I'm confident that the voters will approve because it stands on the very simple principle that government should not be tracking or taxing your miles, he said. Regardless of what type of vehicle you own, regardless of how our roads are funded, freedom to move is a fundamental liberty that has a long-standing track record in America. And, Hoffman said, it's more basic than that. The ability to tax is the ability to control by force, he said. Still, that leaves the question of how to pay for roads as consumers move away from fossil-based fuels. The current numbers aren't great, at least not yet. There are more than 108,000 all electric vehicles registered in Arizona, and while that's a small percentage of the total fleet of more than 8.1 million cars and trucks, their use is growing exponentially, having more than tripled since 2020. That trend so worries ADOT that it has contracted for a study of how much electric vehicles are driven as well as projected changes. In fact, the agency is noting the placement of new fast charging stations as part of the National Electric Vehicle Infrastructure Program, which is, quote, expected to increase the use of EVs both in Arizona and nationally, end quote. What the $74,835 study also is supposed to do is help ADOT determine how this shift will affect fuel use tax receipts. An agency spokesman said the report should be completed later this year or early in 2026. In the meantime, Senator David Farnsworth is the latest in a series of lawmakers who have crafted legislation designed to provide some equity. His SB 1471 would have allowed ADOT to establish a tax on electric vehicles and any other motor vehicles using something other than fossil-based fuels. It provided two methods for the agency to compute the levy, but in both cases, it was designed to be comparable to the fuel tax that would have been paid by a comparable vehicle using gasoline or diesel. The Mesa Republican even included a provision saying the intent is to ensure all alternative fuel vehicles are, quote, paying an amount that is proportionally equal to their use of highways in the state, end quote, and that the vehicles powered by petroleum-based fuels, quote, are not paying for all of the costs relating to highway use and maintenance, end quote. But Farnsworth, who chairs the Senate Committee on Education and Transportation, didn't push it beyond an informational hearing in March after getting resistance from some of his colleagues. There's the fear of government control and the camel's nose under the tent, and before long they're telling us where we can and cannot go, he said. Is that paranoia or reality? Farnsworth asked. But the concern is real, so the measure never advanced. Still, Farnsworth said he will continue to try, saying, "We need to make things more fair." But the failure of his bill also paved the way for Hoffman to line up the votes for his SCR 1004, asking voters to forever eliminate one option, imposing a tax based on miles traveled. Hoffman said that doesn't eliminate all options to tax electric cars. For example, he said he has no problem with consumption taxes based on usage. That's a very different thing, Hoffman said. In fact, that's the basis for the gasoline tax. Motorists pay based on the number of gallons of fuel purchased. In this case, he said, electric vehicle owners already are paying fees and taxes to the electric company based on usage. And there may be more electrons used by someone who is charging a vehicle. But Hoffman said all that is ignoring the real solution. Don't tax gasoline, diesel, or electricity. I believe it is the legislature's job to fund the core responsibilities, public safety and infrastructure being the most fundamental of those things, he said. That, however, doesn't mean Hoffman supports higher overall state taxes to make up for the more than $1.8 billion going into the Highway User Revenue Fund each year, $800 million of which is the levy on fossil fuels used to power motor vehicles. He figures there's enough in the state's $17.6 billion budget to pick up the cost. His position is not a surprise. Hoffman has voted against virtually every spending plan since he was first elected to the legislature in 2020, and he insists that there is no company and no government that cannot find a way to cut 4.5% from its spending. That, however, is likely to get a fight from a majority of lawmakers who just approved the new budget, who have priorities they want funded, whether it's health care, prisons, social services, or even pet projects. Still, there is some precedent for the idea of the state using its income and sales tax revenues to build roads. In fact, the new budget actually has millions of dollars of carve-outs for specific road projects, like widening a stretch of Interstate 10 west of Phoenix to making improvements to State Route 347 that runs between the edge of Phoenix and Maricopa. And it's not just big projects. General fund dollars, the money largely collected in sales and income taxes, also are being earmarked for things like adding a second right turn lane to State Route 87 in Payson and providing traffic control systems in Colorado City. There's also the precedent of voters approving local sales taxes for specific transportation projects, including not just road construction and maintenance, but also mass transit. Governor Katie Hobbs, asked about the issue, said the state needs a, quote, creative solution, end quote, to finding a way to ensure that everyone who uses state roads pays a fair share. The way that gas tax works right now is not fair, she said. The governor, however, said she has no answer. But will she vote for the ballot measure? I have not thought that far ahead, she said. The issue of how to fund road construction and repair actually transcends alternate fuel vehicles and predates their current increasing popularity. A decade ago, Noel Campbell, then a Republican state representative from Prescott, proposed a dime a gallon increase in the gas tax. He pointed out that rate was set in and hasn't been adjusted since 1991. Had it kept pace with inflation, the levy in 2025 would be about 45 cents a gallon. Conversely, the buying power of the current 18-cent levy is worth only about a third. Complicating matters beyond the increasing popularity of electric vehicles is that newer cars and trucks generally are more efficient than the older ones. That means a typical vehicle travels more miles on a gallon of gas, meaning less need to purchase more fuel, even as the number of miles people travel, and provide wear and tear on state roads is not going down. Campbell, however, found little appetite among fellow lawmakers for a tax hike, even if it were referred to voters, and successive lawmakers have had no more luck. End of story. Our next article is entitled Grocery Store Eyed for Downtown Chandler. This was posted in the Stantan Sun, July 5th, 2025, and written by Ken Sane. It may have a long way to go before it's a reality, but it appears a grocery store is coming to downtown Chandler. Chandler restaurant owner Jackson Armstrong said it would be between 12,000 to 14,000 square feet. The idea is that we'll have a pharmacy and there'll be other businesses as well, dry cleaning and another business that we're not ready to disclose quite yet, Armstrong said. The grocery will be built at the previously approved site of the Chandler Food Hall at Oregon and Chicago Streets in the western half of downtown. There were not many plans announced at the June 23rd City Council meeting. The proposal would likely still need to go through Development Services, then Planning and Zoning Commission, and then a new approval by City Council before work begins. But Council seems eager to get a grocery store in downtown. I'm very excited about that, Councilwoman Jane Poston said. We can use that in downtown. It's my dream for 11 years. Armstrong's restaurant group called JEMBJACD LLC bought the city-owned land at 200 and 210 South Oregon Street in 2023 with plans to develop a two-story food hall at that space. However, that group experienced financial constraints as initial cost projections led them to believe a food hall would not be economically viable. Armstrong brought in three new investors and formed a new group, Everstead Ventures, LLC. The action the council approved on June 26th allows JEMBJACD to transfer its rights to the property over to Everstead Ventures. Armstrong will remain the majority owner. Updated drawings for the development show a grocery market on the main floor with three smaller businesses on the side. The second floor appears to be a food hall. There is a third floor, though it is not clear what that will be. In the agreement, the developer states there will be a central bar area surrounded by multiple retail and restaurant tenants. If built, it will not be a full-size grocery store, which are typically around 40,000 square feet. Armstrong did not name any grocery store brand and declined to comment, saying it was too early in the process. To help understanding the size, a typical Trader Joe's market is between 8,000 to 15,000 square feet. Under the previous agreement, JEMBJACD could not make a profit by selling the land, so it must sell it to Everstead Ventures for the same price it paid the city. As part of the agreement council passed this week, it is extending the deadlines for the developer to complete the project. The next deadline they face is October 1st when they must obtain a final development approval, including Planned Area Development, PAD, and Preliminary Development Plan, PDP. The developer must obtain site and building plans approval by March 1, 2026. By March 31, 2026, the developer must submit 90% completed civil plans for the grading permit. Construction must start by July 1, 2026, and it must be completed by October 1, 2027. End of story. You are listening to the East Valley News on Sun Sounds of Arizona. Today we are focusing on the news of the past week for Santan and Queen Creek. My name is Leslie Hunt. I'm your volunteer reader. Continuing on, our next article is entitled Chandler Unified Superintendent to Retire Next June. This was posted in the Santan Sun News, July 3rd, 2025, and written by Ken Sane. Chandler Unified School District Superintendent Frank Narducci has announced he will retire at the end of the next school year. The CUSD Governing Board voted unanimously to start the process to replace him at its June 25th meeting. They authorized staff to put out a request for quotes, RFQ, to companies that specialize in executive job searches. Narducci plans to retire in June 2026. He replaced longtime CUSD Superintendent Camille Castile in 2021 after being promoted from his role as Assistant Superintendent. Next year will be his 30th with the district. After a lot of reflection, my family and I decided that I won't be seeking an extension and instead I will be retiring at the end of the 2025-26 school year, Narducci said in a video announcing his decision. CUSD is strong, really strong. We have talented leaders, dedicated teachers, and a community that believes in the power of education. Castile started her tenure in 1996 and was the superintendent of the district for 25 years. A lawyer advising the board told them the usual time frame for hiring a new superintendent is in the spring, maybe as early as February. Narducci was announced in April of 2021 and began his tenure in July of that year. Chandler Unified School District has been recognized as one of the best in Arizona during Narducci's tenure. The national website Niche and Ranking Arizona by Arizona Big Media both named CUSD the best district in Arizona for 2025. Students in the state's second largest school district earn more than $140 million in scholarships every year, and last year had 66 students earned either National Merit Semifinalists or become Flynn Scholars. CUSD exceeds the state averages in testing scores, graduation rates, and spends less than the state average on administration. However, the district has been criticized often for not doing enough to address student concerns over some inappropriate behavior on campus. That includes a recent case where 13 Castile High School students filed a complaint against a teacher. The State Board of Education's Professional Practices Advisory Committee recommended that five current and former CUSD employees be disciplined in that case. The State Board dropped the complaints against one of the employees and directed PPAC to give the other four administrators, two of whom are retiring this week, new individual hearings. The CUSD Governing Board met in executive session on June 25th to discuss the language it wants in the RFQ. District staff said they have looked at other districts who have recently gone through this process as they craft their own RFQ. The district is expected to begin advertising its RFQ soon with the hope of hiring a firm by later this year. Narducci's annual salary is $250,000. What will happen is they'll send that out, they'll post it, then it'll be brought back to you in a board meeting where you get to look at all of the vendors' responses, Chief Financial Officer Lana Berry told the board. Then you as a board will decide who you want to interview. One area of district management that has increased during Narducci's tenure is marketing. CUSD faces declining enrollment and increased competition from charter schools and others who are taking the state's empowerment scholarship accounts and choosing to educate their children outside the traditional school district. Because of that, the district has stepped up its marketing efforts, hiring additional staff and using advertising to urge parents to choose CUSD. The birth rate is in decline, and the communities inside the district's boundaries are mostly built out. That has led to fewer young families moving into the district and the average age of residents increasing. The district that once was approaching 45,000 students now expects that number to fall to about 35,000 in the next decade. That will create new challenges for the next superintendent. Fewer students means fewer dollars coming from the state. It also means the district needs to consider consolidating resources, including possibly closing some schools. Also a consideration is this year's bond election. Voters rejected a request for $487.5 million in bond authorization last year. This year, the board is asking voters to approve a lower request, $271.5 million. The district says it needs the money to do basic maintenance and repairs, in addition to buying buses and equipment for students. CUSD has very little of its previous bond money left. If voters reject them again this November, that will need to be addressed by the new superintendent. Narducci is well known for his work in education. He has taught educational leadership and theory courses at Northern Arizona University and is an advocate for early childhood education, having served on the East Maricopa County First Things First Council. In addition, he has worked with the City of Chandler's Educational Coalition, Downtown Chandler Community Partnership, Chandler Education Foundation, Chandler Gilbert YMCA, and Read On Chandler is reflected in the support these organizations provide our community. He has been a National Distinguished Principal, Chandler Chamber Administrator of the Year, Si Se Puede Foundation Cesar E. Chavez Educator of the Year, and has won the First Things First Service Award. A native of New York City, he grew up in Tucson and is a graduate of the University of Arizona, where he was a member of the inaugural Pac-10 track team and received his bachelor's degree in elementary education and master's in educational leadership. End of story. Our next article is entitled A Social Butterfly, Remembering a Special Needs Student and Social Director at Queen Creek High. This was posted in the Queen Creek Independent 7/6/25 and written by Janet Pettis. Connor Povar wasn't expected to live long after his birth. He did and will now be long remembered by those whose lives he touched. Connor was born with hydrocephalus, which is water on the brain, and he was born with the most severe case where he shouldn't have lived a week. He shouldn't have made it through the birth process, but he did, and he became a fighter, and he just fought all his way through his life, said Connor's mother, Kelly Povar. The Queen Creek resident died in December, just a few months shy of his 19th birthday and close to graduating from Queen Creek High School, where he was a, quote, super senior, end quote. After hearing his story, Mayor Julia Wheatley recognized Connor's life during the June 4th town council meeting. He is remembered so fondly by his parents, his family members, his friends, his teachers, his community members, and even random strangers whose lives he touched, Wheatley said. In his last few months at QCHS, Connor acted as a, quote, social director, end quote, at the school where he greeted teachers, staff, and students and conducted rounds with the school resource officer. We all just collectively said we need to keep him on to be social director and the greeter, so it was unanimous. That's exactly what he needed to do, and he was great at it, Kelly Povar said. He excelled even though a series of in utero strokes left him paralyzed on his left side that made it difficult for him to speak and walk, and he had to be mostly fed through a feeding tube. Still, Connor, the youngest of six siblings, loved to take walks with assistants. He could say short phrases, and when he said hello, he always gave fist bumps. He would say hi to the school nurse, to the receptionist there at the high school, to kids walking in, kids walking out, his teachers, whoever he saw there on a regular basis, Kelly Povar said. He would say hi to them, and they would always get four fist bumps, never three, never five, and it was always four fist bumps, and he would say, have a great day, and then he'd be on to the next person. Betsy Roth first met Connor when she worked with special needs students at Queen Creek Junior High School. After taking a break during the COVID pandemic, Roth went back to the district and was assigned as a floating aide at QCHS. And lo and behold, there's Mr. Connor. I wasn't assigned to him right away. He had a one-on-one there at the high school, but I was kind of a floater, Roth said. I was there working with all the other special needs kiddos, and his one-on-one had left, so they had asked me to step in because I had known Connor. A redhead like herself, Roth called her partnership with Connor, quote, a good match, end quote. He made wonderful prom date. We would have a special prom every year, and he would get all gussied up in his suit, and I'd wear a nice dress. And they had it for the special ed kiddos, she said. He always liked to dress in his suit. I have some really cute pictures of us dancing. That's another memory that I'll always cherish. After more than 10 years in Queen Creek, Roth decided to move back to Michigan in September to be closer to her family. That was the hardest thing, to put him on the bus for the last time and watch him go away. Oh, it was hard, Roth said. In his last months, Connor got a taste of independent living after his mother suffered a serious heart attack in October, compelling the family to move him to a respite home. I just couldn't take care of him at that time like I used to be able to. I was recuperating. I was really, really hard on me, and so we worked together and found him a respite home to go into. And that was hard for me to let him go, Kelly Povar said. But I knew that he needed to have his own space, and it was a great little house over in Chandler, and he had a roommate and kids his age, so we let him go over there so that I could recuperate and get my strength back. And that's where he passed away. He just died one night in his sleep. Kelly Povar said Connor died of natural causes. While she knew it was inevitable, she said Connor's fighting spirit had her believing that he would live a much longer life. I think I had become complacent, I guess, not thinking this would ever happen. In fact, my husband and I set up a trust, and we had set aside resources and people to take care of Connor when we were gone because we always wanted him taken care of, and he'd just been doing so well that we thought he would outlive us, she said. At the council meeting, Kelly Povar brought items that represented Connor's life, such as his favorite book, The Giving Tree. She now hopes to get a memorial bench in Connor's name installed at QCHS. Connor used to sit on a bench that was out in the courtyard at the school close to the special needs area, and it was under a tree. They got rid of the bench because I guess it was old and needed to be thrown out. So I'm hoping I can put another one there, Kelly Povar said. I want him to be remembered for who he was and for the joy that he spread and the love that he gave to everybody. End of story. Please send your comments about this article to azopinions@iniusa.org. We are committed to publishing a wide variety of reader opinions as long as they meet our civility guidelines. Janet Perez can be reached at jperez@iniusa.org. Our next article is entitled, Queen Creek Staff Member Heads State Economic Group. This was posted in the Queen Creek Independent, July 5, 2025. No author is listed. Queen Creek's downtown development manager has been selected as the new president of a statewide economic development organization. Jennifer Lindley now heads the executive committee of the Arizona Association for Economic Development. She began her term on June 1st. Lindley has been with Queen Creek's Economic Development Department since 2014, where she has helped to drive downtown economic development initiatives. Before working for Queen Creek, Lindley served as the executive director of the Downtown Chandler Community Partnership and as the vice president of the East Valley Partnership, according to the town's economic development newsletter. She also co-founded AZ Downtowns, a group created to try to ensure better statewide collaboration and legislation for downtown development and redevelopment, the release continued. In 2021, she was named the Arizona Association for Economic Development's Economic Developer of the Year for a medium community. The association's executive committee and board of directors work to provide strategic oversight, ensure fiscal responsibility, and guide the organization's initiatives to further economic growth. End of story. Thank you for joining me today for the East Valley News for Santan and Queen Creek. I'm your volunteer reader, Leslie Hunt. Stay tuned for the Arizona Republic coming up next on Sun Sounds of Arizona.